At Camp Tango, Carrie Ann was in the mess hall, along with another woman called Marie. They were grinding bugs' carcasses into paste prior to boiling them up and making stew. Insects were one of the scant resources out in the cemetery that was available in volume, and once you got used to the way the carcasses spit when you crush them and the acidic smell they could sometimes exude, the work preparing them was not so bad. Carrie Ann and Marie had been at Camp Tango 4 months. They were used to it by now. The sun was beginning to set out there, seen through the open doors to the mess hall. That meant that Oscar's crew would be returning from the field pretty soon, and the meal should be ready for when they arrived, hungry and tired from their labors. There was something else, too, for Carrie Ann. She had been harsh to Ricky when there had been that mix-up about who had killed Oscar's son. She wanted to make him something special to show she was sorry. He was younger than her, and there was a benefit in that, because he cared about her once, and when they had made love, he had been tender. More than most of the men she had been with in the camp. She smiled at the thought. Marie didn't look up from her task.
You're slowing down.
Carrie Ann did not reply. She just laughed inside, thinking about Ricky. As she used a press to crush another line of crispy carcasses, Carrie Ann felt a kind of heat inside her. Only this time, it was not the memory of Ricky and how he had felt. It was like a burn, one located beneath her skin and deep down in her belly, behind her eyes. She keeled over in place, lolling off her seat to the floor and sprawling out, her body trembling.
Carrie Ann?
Marie rose and hurried to where Carrie Ann had fallen. The woman lay on her side, her eyes wide open but unfocused, beads of sweat on her brow.
Carrie Ann!
Carrie Ann saw the woman's feet and ankles through a kind of swirl, an unfocused haze of vision. Then, quite comfortably, it all faded to black. The wag was lost, and so was the digger. Oscar's team returned to Camp Tango a little past sunset with just the cart laden with treasures, and those treasures were not the haul they had anticipated. They had hoped to find more metal, plastics, and other durables they could either melt down or repurpose. But in addition to those things, they had over a dozen guns that they had liberated from Irish Colm's crew, as well as some ammunition and some clothing they had stripped from the corpses, along with the same from their own late colleagues. At the gates of the mausoleum complex, Oscar addressed his team.
Tonight, we'll feast and celebrate our fallen. We have a lot to celebrate, a lot of good memories to recall. We'll remember all of them, even if it takes us till dawn.
It was a rallying cry intended to buoy the spirits of a crew who had lost over half their number in a single day. JB listened to the speech, watching the reactions of Oscar's men. The Major still had it, even after all these years, that ability to draw support and to tease the best out of the men who were loyal to him, even in the face of a setback. He and Oscar had fought in spots where they had been backed into a corner and their own men had been massacred. But Oscar had shown the same determination now as then, able to turn things around with a word and a deed, metaphorically punching the air in victory, even when he looked destined for defeat. As they passed through the gates with their spoils and the crew set about unloading the cart, JB caught up to Oscar and cornered him, smiling broadly.
Hell of a day out there. An absolute clusterfuck. But you always were a cheerful bastard.
Why not? The alternative sucks ass.
It surely does.
You know, I'm down a lot of men, Johnny boy. And your platoon more than proved themselves out there. Not just today, but this whole bastard week. Do you think I can tempt you to stick around? With all three Irish brothers out of the picture, I figure things may finally quiet down and get out of here before the winter hits.
Winter's still half a year away, Oz. That is, if it comes here when I'd expect it to.
6, 7 months, doesn't matter. We'll make out like bandits by then. The whole nuked damn cemetery's ours now.
What about the solo operators?
I figure either they'll steer clear or we'll crush them. I never stole from another man, not one who was alive anyway, so I won't bring trouble, not unless they start some.
You make a tempting case, Major.
The armorer looked up then to see where Ryan and the others were, ostensibly to gauge their opinion on his friend's offer. But instead, JB's eyes lit on Mildred, where she waited outside the doorway to the infirmary, and he saw the serious expression she wore.
Millie, you're on your feet. You okay?
John, you should come see this.
JB touched the brim of his hat in salute to Oscar, then walked across the compound to join Mildred at the infirmary.
What is it? Did something happen?
As he stepped through the doorway behind Mildred, JB's eyes unconsciously went to her bed, and he saw the figure of the raven-haired serving woman lying there in Mildred's place. She was unmoving, her eyes closed, and beside her were Ricky, Ryan, Christy, Jack, and Doc, along with a handful of people he recognized from the camp.
What is this?
I tried to help her. They called me right after she collapsed in the mess hall.
She collapsed?
Yes. And right after that, someone called me because the word had gotten around that I'm a physician, but it was too late, JB. I was too late.
Well, what did she die from?
Organ failure, I think. There are signs of infection, bruises on her body. I didn't even know.
Well, you couldn't know, darling. How could you know?
Mildred shied away from his tender arms then, and she looked at JB.
Where are we, John?
Where? I don't know exactly. Oregon.
No, but where? This place. It's a mausoleum. I can see that. And out there, I looked. It's a cemetery. A huge old cemetery that goes on for miles, right?
Yeah, but not for a long time. This place was used just after the nuke cost. It's 100 years dead. They mine it now. Oscar, my old friend, Romeo's pop, he mines it.
You fool. All of you. Don't you realize what you're doing? What you've already done, digging up bodies?
They're dead, Millie. They don't care one way or the other.
I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about you.
She spun on the room.
All of you.
Well, Mildred, hon, you're not making any sense. Take it slow. Explain it to me.
Explain it, he says. Don't you get it, John? You're digging up diseases. Infections are rife in this camp. Almost every bed in this room is occupied by someone suffering with a virus or a bacterial infection. And no one recovers, not for long. They all die.
Mildred, what do you mean?
People died from infections during the nuke cost. And in Skydark, when resources were precious, they died and they got buried and their infections got buried with them. Irradiated diseases. And your friend is digging them back up and infecting everyone.
He just wants the metal. People were buried with trinkets, things precious to them that don't have any great worth no more. But those things can be melted down. He's been turning them into cherries, an unlimited supply of ammunition.
So infected people can shoot at other infected people, so everyone gets to die in one way or another.
Millie...
Don't say it, John. Don't try to defend any of this.
I wasn't gonna.
His boy died because of something he caught out in that graveyard. Him, the kitchen woman, others, people in beds right next to mine. Hell only knows what I've caught and what you and the others might have.
Millie, I'll talk to him. He probably didn't know. The thought likely never crossed his mind. I didn't think of it. These people down there are 100 years dead.
Diseases wait. And worse, they mutate. All this radioactivity has made them into who knows what. They should have burned the bodies. And your friend should never have disturbed them.
I'll talk to Oscar.
You do that. Better hope you're not too late. For all our sakes.
Ricky had stood looking at Carrie Ann's resting body for a long time. Doc sidled up to him.
Come on, lad. Time to say goodbye.
Ricky looked at Doc, and the older man saw that the lad's eyes were rimmed in red.
Why, Doc? Is it me?
It's not you, Ricky. It's life.
Doc placed an arm around Ricky and drew him in close, and the teen pressed his face against Doc's shoulder. Ryan and Christy had found a quiet place in the mess hall, eating bowls of gruel with disinterest. Picking at her food, Christy looked up and saw the way Ryan was eyeing her.
I'm hungry, but I also don't want to eat, you know?
Yeah. What was that?
Oh, I don't know. I tried to channel Gaia, and then I couldn't. But then I felt...
It wasn't Gaia.
No.
Then, what was it?
It was... death. A grave, Widow. I wasn't even in control, just a passenger in my own body.
A grave, Widow. JB eventually found Oscar in the manufacturing building, where the man was supervising the unloading of metal trinkets that would be melted and remolded into ammunition.
Hey, Oz, we should talk.
It's been a long day, Johnny. One characterized by far too many deaths.
It's about that. You need to pack up. You need to go.
You serious?
Deadly serious. My lady, Mildred, she's figured it all out. What you're doing here, it's upsetting the natural way of things. You're uncovering old strains of diseases when you dig up the bodies in the graves.
They've been dead 100 years, Johnny. Anything that got put in the ground is long dead by now.
Millie says not, and I'm inclined to believe her.
Walk with me, John boy. Let me show you something.
JB walked with Oscar until they stood at the gates to the camp, gazing out into the moonlit cemetery where it stretched for miles.
You see it? Now, there's a massive gold mine, and we are in the midst of a gold rush. You think I'm going to walk away from that?
Your people are dying left and right, and not just from landies and bullet wounds. Disease is taking you out one by one. It took your boy and his mother, if I read things right. You get out now, and maybe you and your crew will be okay.
We will be okay.
Fine. Well, we're shipping out as soon as we can gather our gear. You do what you gotta do, Oz.
JB turned away, looking back to the buildings to gather his friends. Ryan, Christy, Doc, Jack, Ricky, Mildred, and JB gathered up what few possessions they had and prepared to leave Camp Tango. Another man had died in one of the infirmary beds, and Mildred just wanted to be out of there now, before she caught something, if she hadn't already.
I'm not normally squeamish around sick people, but there are too many things going around in this place.
I think your caution is most prudent. I find myself jumping at every cough and every clearing of the throat.
Get it all for nothing. No ammo.
Looks that way.
We'll leave with our lives, which is better than the alternative.
Some people didn't even get to do that.
Christy was oddly silent, but if her companions noticed then, they did not remark upon it. The truth was, she was thinking about the manifestation that she had dubbed the Grave Widow, and wondering just what she had conjured forth with her prayer to Gaia, and whether it would come forth again. The environment here was one of death, old deaths, laid end to end in every direction. She had felt from very early on the absence of Gaia in this graveyard. The earth here was absolutely stripped of life in any form. Nothing could grow. Only the bugs remained to break down the bodies that had been buried en masse in the dirt. A place without life was a place without Gaia, she realized. She just wished she knew what that meant. Outside the three mausoleums, the night sky was almost black, a retreating crescent of moon casting light, indifferently, across a land better suited to darkness. The gates were manned as ever by a single sect man, and Oscar and six others were waiting out there. They all had guns in their hands, and they trained them on the companions when they emerged from one of the buildings.
What is this?
Johnny told me you were leaving, Mr. Straight Shooter. But, see, I'm down a lot of men just now. I've been watching you and your crew, and I've been mightily impressed. So, I've been thinking, maybe we can make us a new deal.
Not this time. We're leaving. Oscar shook his head and smiled grimly.
This is not that kind of deal. This is the kind of deal where I dictate terms at the right side of a blaster, and hey, you and your people agree to them, because you are on the wrong side of it.
Without taking his eyes off Ryan, he spoke to his men.
Disarm him.
You expect us to be What? Slaves? You cannot be serious.
We have 6 months left out here. 6 months before I'm bugging out with everything I've collected. You can either work with me, or you can work for me.
You won't last 6 months. This place will kill you.
I'd listen to her, Oz. Ammo and metal ain't worth the risk.
Oscar shot JB an accusatory look.
What's this all about, Johnny? You were always a tough bastard. You never cared about anyone.
The war's over. I became a different man. A better man.
Your friends hold you back. They made you soft. Now you risk your life for them.
No, they made life worth fighting for. You saved my ass more than once. I'm returning the favor one last time, telling you to get out while you still can.
I'll get out when I'm good and ready. Now hand over your weapons or, well, you see what your chances here are.
JB nodded regretfully, and he turned back to his allies.
Do what he says.
What? No!
Ricardo, we are not in a position to negotiate.
Listen to the old man, kid.
It was then JB pulled the shotgun from its hidden sleeve. Oscar dropped, his guts sprayed out across the ground like an eagle spreading wings. Around him, his men were stunned. They hadn't expected immediate resistance, and it took them a moment to react. The companions were faster. Then, it was over. JB paced over to Oscar as he lay there trembling in a spreading pool of blood, and the armorer held the barrel of his shotgun to the man's head.
You always were a greedy bastard. I just didn't like to say.
Johnny!
Maybe you're right about one thing, Oz. Maybe I did grow soft, but I didn't grow stupid.
Then, JB put his old friend out of his misery. They buried the corpses and left the loot. It didn't feel right somehow to take all those cherries that had been molded from the possessions of dead people. The heat of the furnace would have burned away any germs, according to Mildred, but the bullets felt tainted. Jack put it best as he threw one of the cherries back in the pile.
Bad juju.
How do we know that we'll survive? That we're not infected?
I've been thinking about that. We don't. Everyone wore scarves over their mouths, so that will have offered some protection. But once we're back in the redoubt, I suggest we use the Mattrans to jump into a redoubt with a stock of medical supplies, even if we have to keep jumping. Once we find one, hopefully I can treat all of us. And we can just hide out for a week and see what develops, living on canned food and recycled water.
That is what redoubts were designed for.
Maybe we'll find some more whiskey, too. Make the days go faster.
Let's do it, then. Before they left, the companions found the camp's one survivor, a woman called Marie, asleep in the mess hall where she worked.
We should wake her.
No, let her sleep. When she wakes up, she'll see what's happened, and hopefully she'll have the smarts to walk out of here and keep walking.
Or she'll die.
Or she'll die. Rule of the Deathlands.
The companions walked across the graveyard in the moonlight, making their way back to the redoubt and escape.
This is unsettling. There is something terribly chilling about walking through a cemetery at midnight.
Well, whistle a happy tune, Doc.
Of course, maybe someone will hear it and shoot you.
Problem solved.
Deathlands 156 Cemetery Tango is a Graphic Audio production. Deathlands and all characters are trademarks owned by Graphic Audio LLC, used by others under license. Copyright and production copyright 2025 Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Richard Rowan. Featuring Richard Rowan as Ryan Cotter and Jack Lauren, Terrence Aselford as J.B. Dix and Doc Tanner, Colleen Delaney as Christy Roth, Lolita Horn as Dr. Mildred Wyeth, Rob Morera as Ricky Morales, and Mike Carnes as Oscar Tango, with additional performances by Carolyn Kashner, Christopher Williams, Nora Ashrati, Peter Stanley, Jameson Hunt, Matthew Bassett, Donald Guzzi, Drew Kopas, James Konacek, Delton Engel-Sorrell, Chris Stinson, Nick DePinto, Ryan Haugen, Karen Novak, Laura C. Harris, Tia Shearer, and Bradley Foster Smith. Directed by Matthew Bassett. Story by Rick Hoskin. Adapted for graphic audio by Matthew Bassett. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zidney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Ari Weaver. Theme music arranged by David Zidney, based on a theme by Mark Ashby. The Companions will return in Deathlands 157, Wraith Winter. If you've enjoyed Deathlands 156, Cemetery Tango, check out our whole catalog of Deathlands releases available now at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for a preview of another epic title in graphic audio.
From the creator of James Axler's Deathlands comes an all-new series, Outlanders. In the aftermath of the Russian-American nuclear holocaust of 2001, America became the Deathlands. Now, two centuries later, a new order emerges to inflict its rule from within fortified cities. Beyond the walls are the Outlands, where a fragile freedom remains. Once a magistrate, fearsome warrior of the New Order, Cain discovers a secret that has damned humanity since the dawn of history. Now, banished to the Outlands, he joins forces with Bridget Baptiste, flame-haired keeper of the Cobaltville Archives, and Grant, brother-in-arms and weapons specialist. In the place that was once called New Mexico, Cain finds the first hidden clues to humanity's future.
Point Berg, status.
Under fire, a Vulcan phalanx turret.
Copy, take it out.
Roger. Hang on, we're taking her into the canyon.
Do you know why I have had you brought here?
No.
Because you belong to me. From the day of your birth, you have belonged to me. As did your father.
Who am I to Baron Cobalt?
I offer you the chance to be one of my chosen ones.
Chosen for what?
To hear the truth. Are you ready to hear the truth, Cain?
We are old. When your race was wild and bloody and young, we were already ancient. Your tribe has passed. All of the achievements of man are dust. They are forgotten. We stand. We are.
They're on to us now. They've got some kind of weapon. I don't know what it is, but it's nasty. They almost got me.
Yeah, they're trying to outflank us. The little fuckers sure are light on their feet.
Here they come!
Go, go, go!
Get down!
Catch the ride from the start. Outlanders number one, Exile to Hell. Available in May 2006. Welcome to the new reality. Welcome to the Outlands. It was time for many duties to begin, and the promenade was thronged with movement, with people heading to their duty stations in the administrative monolith. Even though they were of the Cobaltville elite, the people were subdued, many of them wearing self-conscious expressions of carefully calculated neutrality. Necessarily so, since Frank's self-expression could catch a magistrate's attention, and that could lead to any number of unpleasant consequences. Though he looked for her, Cain didn't see Bridget Baptiste. The only trash hatch they saw was being serviced by a sullen-faced Outlander girl, hardly more than 12 years old, so Cain kept the disc in his coat pocket. Grant took the elevator to sea level. Time was growing short, and Kane wished he could stop off in the day room to wolf down a few sesame seed biscuits and swig a cup of sub. As it was, at least he was feeling a little closer to near-human status again. They walked into the briefing room to find Salvo already standing at the lectern. 24 magistrates sat on the rows of hard benches, listening to Salvo with impassive faces. Salvo glanced up when Kane and Grant dropped onto one of the benches, but didn't even raise an eyebrow, so Kane figured Salvo hadn't reached his or Grant's orders for the day.
Banyan and Coleman, intel section, collating outlands reports. Leduc, Jessup, and Kovacs, agricultural section, security. Oris, Fielding, and Newson, manufacturing section, security. Boone, Grant, and Kane, PPP duty.
Grant and Kane exchanged surprised glances, then shifted their stares to Salvo. PPP duty, pedestrian pit patrol, was a first-year mag assignment. All newly badged enforcers were required to patrol the pits as part of their first-year duties. Generally, the patrol consisted of nothing more than checking ID chips to make sure they were VIL-approved and not bogus. Pit dwellers were stopped at random, ordered to present their left forearms for inspection, and a hand scanner would react positively if the subcutaneous chip was legit. PPP duty was supervised by one senior magistrate, never a pair of them. Pits could be dangerous places, especially for rookie enforcers with no real combat experience, but there hadn't been a major outbreak of anti-mag violence in the Cobaltville pit in a generation. Even the latest in a long line of self-proclaimed pit bosses, a border runner named Guana Teague, kept an exceptionally low profile. And though it was true Boone had been recently awarded his badge and therefore was required to take patrol, assigning two veteran mags to nursemaid him seemed ridiculous and a waste of resources. After the rest of the shift filed out, Kane approached the lectern.
Tell me why.
Why what?
Pit patrol.
It's a standard duty assignment. You should know that by now.
Why the two of us?
Salvo collected his papers and pushed past him.
Why not? Where is it written that two senior magistrates can't be assigned to supervise a PPP?
Without another word, he turned and strode out of the briefing room. Kane turned toward his friend, raising his hands in a gesture of exasperation.
This is your fault, you know.
A young, slender man of Asian extraction re-entered the room and moved toward Kane.
I'm Boone. It's an honor to be working with you.
Let's get this honor over with.
They marched out into the corridor, Boone a bit behind, trying to match their impatient, long-legged stride. They stopped briefly at the tech desk so Boone could pick up a scanner. It was a small, cylindrical gadget, not more than 4 inches long, with a two-pronged sensor probe at one end. At the private elevator, they showed the sentry on duty their badges. The sentry punched in the numbers on a miniature 3-digit keypad, and the door panel rolled aside. They stepped into the car. The elevator was one of 6 shafts on sea level that dropped directly to the pits. The largest of the shafts was positioned in the armory and could accommodate an armored wag filled with a magistrate squad, just in case a pit outbreak had to be quelled. The sentry, with studied casualness, pressed a control toggle and set the lift for a fast descent.
Whoa!
The platform seemed to suddenly drop from beneath their feet. Grant and Kane affected not to notice the feeling of their stomachs forcibly climbing into their throats.
Remember the last PPP we worked?
You mean when old Guana was paying hard jack for mag body parts?
What?
A weird fad. Pit dwellers tend to bore easy, need their diversions. What was it? 6 gold creds for a mag nose, 8 for a tongue?
Yeah, and 20 for a set of balls. Getting those was a real bitch.
When was this?
Last year. Right, Grant?
I never heard of that fad before.
No wonder. Triple bad for morale. Salvo did his best to cover it up, but...
Oh! Oh! Oh!
Boone stumbled forward, his face bumping against the door panel. It slid aside, and he froze as the air of the Tartarus pits filtered into his nostrils. Kane and Grant exchanged grins, and Kane pushed the young man out of the car with a hearty backslap.
Let's be careful out there. The price of balls may have gone up.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.